there's a meeting and we want to put out on.
There you go. So we want to report out on the one closed session item, which was public employee appointment pursuant to government code section 54957B1, district administrator, that the board did interview two candidates. We have had significant discussion. We did not conclude that discussion, and therefore we are going to continue that item to the end of the agenda to be concluded with the closed session. That's item number 13. Good enough? Okay. So at this point, what I'd like to do is we are back in open session, and let's do a roll call.
Director Hill?
Here.
Vice Chair Guerrero?
Here.
Chairman Schultz?
Yeah, here. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a flag salute?
Director Hill, ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. Okay, moving on, is there anyone that would like to comment to the board on any items not on the agenda tonight?
Good evening. My name is April McLaughlin. I'm a Five Cities resident. The first item that I would like to address is that I'm not here to ambush anyone, so I don't know why I get an email unsolicited that has concern that I'm here to ambush anyone. I find it disturbing that the district considers my input and my involvement an ambush when I'm just here as a concerned citizen. So I would complain to the email sender, but the only person I could complain to, their direct supervisor, is in a relationship with them. So I find that I really don't have that ability. So I would just like the board to understand that I'm not here to ambush anyone. I'm here as a concerned citizen. On February 16th, the Grover Beach City Council had a meeting. And in their meeting, they do, like AG does and others, committee reports. And at that point, Mr. Schultz, representing the Sand District, said that the, and I quote, board invited Mr. Wallace to come in and respond to the Knutson report. Having been at the meetings in February or January, I'm not sure which, I think February, I do not recall an actionable item in which you three voted to invite Mr. Wallace to come represent anything. There was no action voted on or approved to invite him. Who invited him? Who instructed the interim general manager or operations manager to invite him? Who did that? That was not an actionable item. The quote that I took from it was that the board took all that feedback and information from the Knutson report and from Mr. Wallace's solicited presentation, apparently, and that although the board did not change its decision to turn in the Knutson report to the FBI and the various government agencies, that Wallace's presentation was included. And that's a direct quote from the Grover Beach Council meeting. And I do, again, not recall at any point that there was an actionable item to include Mr. Wallace's presentation. The ratepayers are shocked by this, and I'm one of them, that the term alleged and potential, and I use those quotes because those were said at the Grover Beach meeting, and a quote-unquote, again, I don't want to say too much, but I would like to say too much. I would say that's too much. Did that happen? If it wasn't an actionable item, then who instructed anyone to turn that presentation in to the FBI along with the Knutson report? That was not the actionable item that this board took back in February or whenever that was. I would like to know that answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'm looking around the room as I headed to the podium, and I think maybe only Matt and I out of all the people that are here, were at the February 20, 2013 Sand District Board meeting where Mr. Wallace resigned. The reason I mention that is this last week or so, Tim Cleath from Cleath Harrison Associates wrote an opinion piece, a letter to the editor, saying that the district owed Mr. Wallace some declaration of appreciation and that there's still time to do such a thing. Well, that night, it wasn't on the agenda, but the board went to closed session where Mr. Wallace made it clear first to the board that he was resigning. When they came out to open session, that room was full of people. There were former director of Oceano, Barbara Mann, was there. Former councilwoman of Grover Beach, Dee Santos, was there. Michael LeBrun from Napomo was there. Katie DeSimone from the Water Board was there. Mr. Nichols, Mr. Ferrara, I don't recall if Mr. Guerrero, all gave kudos, thanks. It's been a lot, nice run, long run, whatever, best wishes. There was a break. There was cake, cookies, coffee. And then the board came back to do their work. So when I read the letter to the editor from Mr. Cleath, I thought, well, wait, they did appreciate him. They gave him a send-off. There was cake and cookies. Maybe there wasn't a declaration with a stamped seal, but by getting a paycheck, you are appreciated. That's all you get. That's all you should expect. And not only did Mr. Wallace get a paycheck, but he kept his firm employed on the backs of the ratepayers of this district. So I just kind of wanted to set that record straight. Mr. Cleath wasn't there, but I was there, and I've looked at the minutes. A lot of people were there. And Mr. Wallace was appreciated for the work. It's what's come to light since that really has us all second-guessing in the appreciation.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Anyone else?
Ms. Welsh, ratepayer, resident of Arroyo Grande. I have to say, during this whole last year, Mr. Wallace could have come to any one of those meetings and presented his side. I emailed you, Mr. Scholes, and I told you I didn't agree with Mr. Wallace getting that 10 minutes, which ended up being almost 20 minutes of time, to have all his little cronies in here backing him and everything else. And when I thought about the major improvements, he'd done two major improvements as things went downhill. Not a lot of them, like his pretty little slides and color showed us and everything else. I wanted to just say to you, I really don't like that you did that and that you put them at the beginning of the meeting. That all of us who are here all the time, we get to sit there and listen to that. I think he should have had to have sat here through that whole meeting. And I think you were looking out for your friend, and I didn't appreciate it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close public comment. And I will say this, Ms. McLaughlin, and I take my job very seriously. I believe I'm honest, and I'm not saying I'm perfect. I make mistakes. And I was pretty certain when this board considered that item, I asked the board members if they were okay inviting Mr. Wallace here to give a response. And on the advice of legal counsel, I believe there was consensus. Now, if I use a wrong word in reporting to Grover Beach, I will go back and look at the tape, because it is not my intention to give my council, my community, wrong information. And if I made a mistake, I will apologize. I know you haven't had a chance to get to know me, and I understand that. But I appreciate you bringing that to my attention, and I will look into it. Okay?
To amplify that a bit, I think we did agree that Mr. Wallace could come and make a comment during the regular public comment period and might be given some additional minutes on that. I don't recall any acknowledgement to send any of his materials onto the various agencies, but we did agree, by my recollection, that he could come and present whatever he was going to present.
Great, thank you. Then thank you for that, Jim. I will make a correction because clearly the information he's presented was public information, and I think there was a question asked if he had anything in written form, and apparently if the DA or anyone wants it, they can contact him. So I just want to step up and acknowledge that. And the more I think you, hopefully you will get to know me. I'm not a person that's trying to mislead anyone, and I do have the ratepayers' best interest at heart. But I also have to try and protect this district and do and what I believe is fair. And so I know that's not going to be the most popular decision sometime, but I hope you'll understand what I'm trying to do. And I'm not always, like I said, not always going to be perfect, but I'm going to try and do what's the right thing to my best of my ability. So I think with that, we're going to move on, and we're going to do consent agenda tonight. There are three items on consent. One is item 7A, review and approval of minutes of the meetings of February 17th. One is review and approval of warrants, and then the third is a second reading of ordinance 2016-01. Do any members of the board want to pull any items from consent?
No, I had a couple of corrections that I think Mr. Clemens had already taken note of on the minutes, and that was that the ordinance was 2016-01 that was specifically referenced.
Okay. Matt, you have anything you want to pull?
No.
Do any members of...
Right. No, I don't.
Okay. Do any members of the public want to address any item on consent?
Julie Tacker again in ordinance 2016-01. It says at in the very last paragraph, section 4, second paragraph, the district bookkeeper shall also post a copy. Let's see, district bookkeeper.
Which paragraph, Julie?
Section 4. So we're on page 4, section 4, second paragraph, begins with the word alternatively. And the last sentence, the district bookkeeper shall also post a copy of the full text of the ordinance with the names of those directors voting for and against the ordinance on the district's internet website. Because this is the second reading, I'm not sure. This is a legal question. Ms. Lucy cast the first vote. By doing this now, are we undoing her vote, or is her name going to be on that, or is it going to be Mr. Guerrero's? I've never seen this before, it's really just a question.
Great. Thank you, Julie. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. Again, not to ambush, I just have a question as a concerned citizen. This warrant packet starts with the number past the date 1081, and I believe the last warrant packet ended with the number 1079. So I'm curious to know where 1080 is. It looks like this warrant seems to be a little different because the number 88 had been duplicated somewhere, and now that I'm looking at the one in the books, it's different now. So, and then the other question I had is, where is payroll? It doesn't seem to show up all that regularly. Payroll in the bank credit card activity and the paychecks fee. It's like every third or fourth one, even though I know payroll's done every 2 weeks. So I'm wondering what's the status or protocol of how that gets reported, because I don't feel like it's consistent or reflecting how truly often we pay payroll, or the district pays payroll, as bloated as it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Beatrice Spencer, also a ratepayer. My concern is the $14,484.96 for health insurance. I know almost a year ago, we had brought forth the benefits for employees. And I'm just curious, this $14,000, nearly $500, how many people does that cover? Or how many employees does that cover? Is this including past employees? But that would be paid out of the CalPERS. So this is just current employees. No, not current employees. I'll let you guys answer my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Is anyone else? I don't think we have a handheld mic, do we?
She's
coming up. Okay.
I just wanted to pass some information. Oh, Sharon Brown, Grover Beach resident. I just wanted to pass on some information that kind of bothered me regarding the rate increase. As it was presented, it was a monthly. It showed up as a monthly. And, you know, those figures didn't look so bad. But if we look at it on an annual basis, it kind of looks different. By July of 2019, the annual rate will be $305.76. For those of us on fixed incomes, if this is on the property tax, it's just one more burden we have to try to keep track of. In addition to which, it seems like every time we turn around lately, we are having something added to our property tax, including street repairs in Grover or something at the state level. Something's put on the ballot, and it is becoming increasingly difficult. So in considering the property tax part, I don't know what we can do about it because that saves the district money. But at the same time, for those of us on fixed incomes, it seems simpler to pay it month by month.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Brown.
I'm glad Ms. Brown brought that up because one of the things I'm not sure she even thought of is that our property tax goes up, I think it's 1.5% every year. So by putting this on our property tax, and I'm one of those ones who I'm on a fixed income, so this does affect me. And, you know, so every year that rate is going to go up because of what's written in to our property tax. So thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay. I see no one come forward. Let me close this to the public. And Mr. Trujillo, Ms. Tacker asked a question regarding the ordinance and votes. Could you address that, please?
Good evening, Chairman Scholes and board members. She does raise a very interesting issue. Because of alternates, it's theoretically possible that the majority could switch on a vote. In this case, we already have a vote on the original ordinance. The second vote to approve the second reading will be based on the three individuals sitting up here tonight. On that vote, you're not limited to voting the same way as an alternate did. You each exercise your independent judgment in voting on this matter tonight.
Okay. And then I think staff was taking notes when Ms. McLaughlin was speaking. Any response to, I think there was a question regarding where's payroll on the warrants, and hopefully you guys took some of the other notes. Do you have any information for us?
Payroll is reported once a month with the Rabobank reimbursement. And what was your other question?
The other had to do with, I think, the numbering.
Check numbering.
I will go find that one.
was that? I'm sorry.
She said she'd have to find that one.
Okay, so you can get that information. We'll present it next time. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Oh, Ms. Spencer asked a question regarding the cost for the health insurance. I think she partially answered it, but, you know, is there a way we can confirm that that's active employees and the number?
Yeah, the health insurance is a combination of active employees and retirees. It's not just active employees. So that's, again, something that'll be being dealt with here down the road.
Okay.
There are five retirees, I believe, at this time.
Okay, thank you. And I think there were other comments, but no questions. So with that, let's see if the board is ready to make a motion on the consent agenda.
If I may point out what appears to be a typographical error, and I think it comes up on the from the questions on the warrants, and that is that there's in the warrant number column on the warrant register, there's two numbers, 88, and it appears that the one to Granger for equipment maintenance should not be there. That's a typographical error. That line should be, in fact, blank, because the amount $277.28 is rolled up with the $18.86 above that, and the actual warrant number 92 is for $294.14, which is the cumulative amount on Granger. It's because we have the two different cost centers there in the account. So that second number, 88, that appears in the warrant register appears to me to be a spurious number.
That's been corrected already. Yeah. Most current register, so it's already
so corrected. That has been deleted, it looks like.
Okay.
So you're correct, Jim. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, Matt, anything?
No, I'd move to approve the consent calendar.
Okay.
Second.
There's a motion to approve and a second. If there's no additional discussion, how about a roll call?
Director Hill?
Yes.
Vice Chair Guerrero?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. Thank you, John. Motion carries. Let's move on to item number 8. This is a plant superintendent's report. Mr. Clemens, you have the floor.
Good evening, Chairman and Board. We'll start with operations, and operations are our numbers are solid once again. We are not approaching any violations with regard to our permit limits. Moving on to maintenance, we replaced broken fitting at the chlorine pump, installed piping on our centrifuge grinder. We had to derag our number one primary pump, recorded vibration readings on all our motors as a baseline for preventive maintenance. Replaced pressure regulator on number four influent pump. We tested our 10 million gallon a day bypass pump. We tested our emergency generator and removed piping from our sludge thickener pump pad. The sludge thickener has been out of service for more than 20 years, and we're disassembling that area. And of course, we had a number of work orders we performed. With regard to being in progress, Gary and Taylor, so we're still working on a sewer bridge contract. We just got a letter from Fish and Wildlife. Thank you. We just got a letter from Fish and Wildlife. We can proceed with our recoding. So it's moving along slowly, but it's moving. Staff is working with MKN Associates. We've actually issued a RFP for the grit removal project. We've set up a pre-bid date and an actual bid deadline, so it's already been issued. Staff is preparing an RFP for installation of mechanical bar screen in the headworks. And by the way, the RFP is posted on our website, by the way, so for going back to the grit removal. And staff is preparing RFP for a mechanical bar screen. We're looking to issue that within the next month. With regard to our secondary process, we will have a permitting update again for the board next month. We've filed an electronic CDP, and we're following here shortly with, we expect to have the hard copy to the Coastal Commission by the end of this week. So we'll be waiting for a response. With regard to the satellite water resources recovery facility, we'll be having a, that's part of a staff report, a later item on this agenda. We're working with PG&E about possible energy conservation projects. Mainly at this point, again, another effort at a cogeneration unit and seeing how that would play into what we're doing. Obviously, if we go to activated sludge, it's going to be we're going to at least double our energy consumption, and if we can mitigate that by having a cogen unit and using the gas that we burn off right now to power an engine that would provide energy, then that would be an answer for the increased power consumption. We are still working on a short-term emergency backup plan in case of FFR failure. Staff has ordered some piping, and we're looking at pumps and checking with the different pump providers like Rain for Rent and Hertz to see if we need to get a pump short notice, where we can get it from on a rental basis. But we've also ordered the hard piping, and we should be installing the hard piping up to start the FFR real soon. And we're also working to restore GIS manhole mapping system. We've checked with one engineer. We're having another engineer submit a price proposal so that we can get our GIS system up and going again. That maps our manholes, the elevations. When we add information and inspect manholes, or when we take a video of sewer lines, then we can attach those videos to specific locations in the mapping system, so we can pull up that section and we'll see all of our maintenance, all of our videos, all of our pictures and information with regard to that section of piping or that manhole. And so we're looking to get that thing up and running again. We're in the miscellaneous section. Staff attended an in-house safety meeting on chemical safety. And again, we met with staff from the City of AG and Dan Heimel of WSC to discuss the potential scope of the recycled water study. It's an item that we'll be discussing a little later in the meeting. That's the end of my report. I'll be more than happy to answer any of the board's questions.
Thank you, John. Any questions of Mr. Clemens?
We actually did get a permit for the recoding on the sewer bridge.
They had the state was ready for us to do it, so they sent us a letter saying, "Hey, if you don't do something now, then we're gonna cut off this program." And we sent them a letter back saying, "Hey, don't cut it off. We're about ready to get started." So I think I'm not sure if that was a miscommunication or what, but the state has sent us a letter and let us know that they're willing and waiting for us to do the project. And if we weren't interested, is basically what they were saying, then they were ready to close it. So, and again, we responded that we're preparing to do it.
I'm glad we're still pursuing that, because it's just taken an unbelievably long time.
Yeah, when the state starts telling you you're taking too long, that's
a problem. There's a change for you.
Yeah, that's a turnaround, so we'll try to get moving better on that one.
Okay, very good. Any other questions?
No.
Matt, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. Thanks, John. I have a concern about the cogeneration project. Obviously, we had one previously. We ended up in litigation with that vendor. The system failed to operate as designed, and as purchased by the ratepayers. Additionally, there was wasn't just us. There was numerous agencies throughout the state that had similar problems with theirs and the siloxane buildup. So, obviously, to decrease cost to the plant, I would like to entertain all options, but I'm going to be very cautious about looking at any cogeneration units without a serious backing and guarantees and insurance policies, frankly. I don't know if you recall, when we did go after that particular company, they were bankrupt by the time we got there. And so there was a lot of ratepayer funds that were expended and lost on that project, and we don't even have it in there anymore. I think we have our boiler system in there in place, correct? Yeah.
The engine's still sitting there.
Still sitting there, yeah. That's what was broken, right? It was gonna be.
Yeah, and actually it's a rebuilt engine, but they, obviously, it had been broken twice, so it was better not to attempt it a third time and at a cost to the district.
It was hundreds of thousands of dollars just to fix it, wasn't it?
Okay, I'll say this. I had a successful run with the cogen system in when I worked at North of the River. We ran that system for the entire 3 years that I was supervisor out there. So I have some confidence. But I when I got out here, I saw differently. There was one company that sold several, again, in the area, and none of them worked. What we're doing now is this is through PG&E. And so PG&E, this would be more like not your typical bid. It would be a situation where PG&E would take over, and they'd be responsible for getting the contractor, and they'd be responsible for the construction. It's something that I believe they just did with the city of San Luis Obispo. And so if we go with PG&E, I guess the guarantee is that PG&E's, they're vested in a way where if we lose, they lose, and it is PG&E. We've also, though, taken a proposal from an engineering firm that we're very familiar with. I agree with you. We need to move cautiously on this. We need to make sure it'll work. The upside of it is that it would mitigate, and in one case, save us $75,000 a year, and in the case of PG&E, they believe we can save as much as $150,000 a year. And so
I don't remember. What are the savings right now that we're getting with the boiler system? Our gas bill. Remember the gas company came out and checked our meter twice because our consumption went down so much?
When it's running well, it's $2,000 a month. Yeah, okay. Just from that alone. So we're using that gas for the boiler. We've had a couple issues with the boiler, so it's not 100% all the time. But, yeah, it's $2,000 a month. And so that
is the cogeneration exclusive of the boiler system. Meaning, can we have both, or is it one over the other?
Well, the cogeneration systems, the way they build them is that you would not necessarily need a boiler because they use the exhaust. Of course, you have an engine and a turbine, and the exhaust creates heat, and you use that heat to heat the water if you need to.
That's right. I recall that now. Thank you.
The cogen system I ran before, sometimes the heater didn't work, and we ended up using a boiler and a cogen, which, since both of them draw digester gas, is kind of a tricky balance when you're trying to do it that way.
Thank you, John.
Okay.
Thank you, John. I don't have any questions. Do any members of the community want to address the item before the board?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And where you just touched on, because it wasn't much of a report, on the permit processing, where we're at with the coastal development permit. John told you that it was electronically filed. I've gotten it. I've read it. I'm really, you need to read it. I'm kind of curious if you've been forwarded that electronic copy. You should have been. And if you haven't, when will you be? And I just want to remind you that 2 weeks ago, when Mr. Nunley stood here, he told us all that the application would be filed by the end of that week. The end of that week would have been Friday, February 19th. The application was filed electronically. Sunday the 28th has a date on it of Monday the 29th. So 10 days later than what he told you. And what you've been told is that the Coastal Commission has 2 months to respond. They have 2 months to respond from an application that is deemed complete. This application is not complete. So don't get your hopes up that in 2 months they're going to tell you this is an easy project or a hard project, whatever. It's not that simple. And when you read it, you will see what's not there. And when I fill out an application and turn in it electronically and follow it up with a hard copy, I simply print it and maybe put it in a nice little slip cover and throw it in the mail. Why is it taking till the end of this week to do that? I don't quite understand. There should be no difference between what was submitted electronically and what's being submitted by the end of this week. And if there are, you kind of got to start over, and it's a whole new document. So just want to bring that to your attention, and you need to see it. We need to see it. We need to hash through it as a community and fix it already. I'm sorry.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward. John, thank you for that report. And let's move on. We've got other items that we need to get to. Let's go to item number 10. So we are going to move to board action on individual items. The first is 9A, which is review of board bylaws. Mr. Clemens or Mr. Trujillo, who's giving this pretty staff report?
Good evening again, board. The recommendation is that the board, by motion, approve an amendment to the bylaws providing for a chairperson when the chair, and actually when the vice chair is absent. As a matter of background and discussion, as a good housekeeping practice, the board reviews its bylaws annually. Annual review provides an opportunity for board members to revisit these rules for internal operation and to implement change to provide for smooth meeting flow. District legal co-counsel has reviewed bylaws, and they appear to be in legal order. However, in preparing agendas, it is helpful for staff to know which person will be chairing each meeting in advance of the meeting. Currently, bylaws do not address this consideration. There's an example with the city of Santa Maria, and the staff is proposing a similar provision for the district bylaws. If approved, the provision will require the chair to name the chairperson for any meeting when the chair and the vice chair will be absent, either by designation or by standing order. With that, the specific change, I'll let district council handle.
Mr. Trujillo.
Thank you. There is a redlined version that has been handed out. So if you do not have it, let me know. But the change is to section 1.3 on the first page of the bylaws.
That's an addition?
Yes.
I think it's...
Oh. Okay. I'll walk you through it. Apparently, you do not have the red line version.
Oh, okay.
So it reads 1.3 with the changes. If the chair and vice chair of the board will both be absent, the chair may name any member of the board to perform the duties of the presiding officer prior to the meeting. If the chair's absence is unexpected, the chairperson shall be as specified by standing order of the chair. So this change is intended to provide some predictability and consistency for staff to know who to contact in preparing agendas for meetings. With that, I'll be happy to answer any of your questions. And this language did come from similar language that the city of Santa Maria has used for years.
Yeah, and then let me clarify, because it looks like it actually is in our packet. It just wasn't, just not read, right? It's in this packet, so it should be in the packet available to the community. It's, well, it's not read. It's not in our packet. It's actually just black text, and so it's not a legislative draft, but the wording he just read is actually on 1.3, and it's the second sentence, the second and third sentence, correct?
That is correct. The language that was posted on the agenda is the proposed language, if it's adopted by the board tonight. But you do not have a redline version.
Okay, but the actual wording is in the document before, so I want to just be clear
correct
on that. Okay.
And if you'd like, I can read the existing language.
Do any board members?
I have a question.
Yeah, Jim, go ahead.
That language in the new language in 1.3 appears to conflict with 2.9, which still seems to have the old...
That was my question as well. Where it mentions, or his slash her designee.
Which appears to refer back to the vice chair's designee rather than the chair.
So I think if we adopt this, it should just be made consistent at 2.9.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, let's...
You're correct. If you choose to make this change to the bylaws, then I would ask that you give us direction to also look at 2.9 and make it consistent with whatever changes the board decides to do tonight.
Thank you for that. Any other questions?
I have a comment on page 3 where it says 2.6D Delta. Persons addressing the board are requested to state their name and their general place of reference, and we certainly do request that, but I would ask that we further clarify provision of such information is at the option of the person addressing the board.
Okay. So let's hold that comment until, once we got to the public, we'll come back and we'll see where the board is, and if you're so inclined to include that language, then make a motion and we'll go from there.
Can I say something with regard to the red line? The red line version is not a complete document. It's a draft, and it was available for our legal, but what we present to the board is always going to be the final product of whatever we're going through. So that's a transitional document. It doesn't go out to the public.
No, it's okay, John, because what we have is actually the final one.
Yes.
I think we're all clear on that.
Okay.
Matt, you have any questions?
No, I would just join Mr. Hill's comments.
Okay. And I don't have I don't have any question. I had a comment, so I'll hold that. Let me go out to the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to address this item?
One, for what we pay in legal fees, I'm a little shocked that the audience members caught the conflict. Legal staff did not. But going to 2.6, Section D, according to White versus Norwalk, we do not have to state our name. So I'm glad Mr. Hill stated that. And then I go over to page 4, section L, and it says that exhibits, letters, reports, etc. Near the bottom it says, the chairperson has the discretion to strike a speaker's comment from the record for failure to lodge the reference documents. Wow. So if we don't give you the package, our comments are stricken from record? Doesn't seem very transparent. And then let's go over to page 7, 5.5. And again, it says the district secretary shall attempt to record the names and general place of residence of the person addressing the board. Again, Norwalk versus White. You cannot ask that. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Debbie Peterson, ratepayer. I have a few comments, and I've brought these before the board in the past, but I did want to raise them again. BS 2.6, Disturbance of Board Meetings, Rules of Decorum, and just remind you that this isn't a Rotary meeting and we don't get to set the rules. The rules are set by law, and so they're not something that we get to set. The chair does have some discretion, but I would caution against being too restrictive in discussing boisterous conduct, clapping, talking, and our definitions of disruption, because we don't want to be putting the district in the position of violating First Amendment rights. Also, to suggest that members of the audience, this is number or item B under 2.61, to suggest that members of the audience who wish to address the board on a particular item on the agenda shall line up behind the podium or sit in the front two rows next to the podium. I think that to make a hard rule that that's what people have to do, number one, you never enforce it. You never suggest it. So why have the rule? Number two, you might suggest it, or you might leave it to the chair's discretion. It might be a more accurate way of doing it, and perhaps a more appropriate way of doing it. I don't think that you can necessarily enforce where people sit if they're going to speak. And also 6.4 and 6.5, where you're suggesting that directors shall at all times conduct themselves with courtesy. And I think that you all can agree amongst yourselves that you're going to do that, but you can't force one another to do that. Again, each of you have First Amendment rights as well, and if you want to be rude, it is your prerogative to be rude. Not the best practice necessarily, but it is your prerogative. Differing viewpoints are healthy in the decision-making process. This is 6.5. Individuals have the right to disagree with ideas and opinions, but without being disagreeable. Well, no. Our Constitution does not support that. Our Constitution supports freedom of speech. And so if you wish to be disagreeable, that is, again, your option. Not the best option, perhaps, but it is your choice. And so I'd like you to just consider some of those things. I am not, as you have probably observed, in favor of those styles of communication. I do, however, support your right to behave in that manner should you choose to.
Is there anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and I would recommend that in the future we do strike-through versus red text so that we can all track the changes. Second, just want to point out that Mr. Seitz is the author of much of this. Third, Mayor Hill began to point out some things, and I wish he would have been allowed to continue. I wish we had heard your comments, Mr. Guerrero's comments, because you, the three of you, collective great minds, could have maybe put all of our minds at ease. We may not have had to come to the podium at all. You wouldn't have had to have a parade of the public, because you might have caught everything that we were looking at. I'm going to let you do that. You fix what's wrong.
Is there anyone else?
Beatrice Spencer. Maybe I'm the only one who doesn't understand this whole alternate between Oceano's representative, their president, and then Mr. Guerrero. But when I look at these, and I highlighted 1.3 and 2.9, and I'm just very concerned that we could have, if this is the way I'm reading it right, we could have an alternate be the chair. Or is Director Lucy, if somebody could just please explain that. I don't feel like the presiding chair should be an alternate to the board, and I'm not sure if 2.9 clears that up or if 1.3 takes that away, and maybe the changes that I didn't see actually fixed that all and I just didn't get it. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good Good evening. I don't know how this could be addressed, but my concern personally is that the alternate for Grover Beach is someone that I would never want to represent the Sand District at this point. So however that could be addressed, as we were looking to auditors and their relationships, maybe with Wallace, et cetera, my concern is that any alternates who are related to or have direct relation to the Knutson Report, I personally would really request that they are not an alternate anyone. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment. Anyone else? Seeing no one. Oh, Sharon, coming up.
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. I'm a little concerned that we are directing our attention to potential individuals rather than a broad policy. And I think maybe that's what bylaws are supposed to be, are broad policies. So maybe we need to address this question of alternate serving in what categories and positions and in general. I think that Oceano has been presenting an interesting scenario of shipping people in and out. Maybe we need to address that as a whole.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public and bring it back. And I did want to say that 1.3, as I read it, actually does address the item that's been brought up here. So I think that was kind of part of that. And clearly there's a conflict between that and, I think, 2.9. So I think, Jim, as you pointed out and others have pointed out, we would have to definitely be consistent. I will say that it would have been nice to have a legislative draft come forward, because the truth of the matter is, these are bylaws that are these. How long have these bylaws been in place? Do we know? The only addition that was recommended was 1.3. Is that, am I correct? Right. For tonight. So these are not bylaws that this board has written. We're reviewing these. So I don't know if we're at a point where it would put everyone at ease by having a legislative draft, and I don't know if there's a deadline that we have to adopt these. But I'll see what the rest of the board wants to do with this.
Well, I would think that the 2.9 language should be made consistent with the 1.3. I understand the comments from the public, but again, I like your suggestion of getting a legislative draft so that those items can be considered and thoughtfully considered prior to having a meeting, and we could receive that input and testimony from the public.
Okay. Jim?
As far as comments?
Yep. Comments, emotions, anything that you like?
Move that the bylaws be modified as shown in the exhibit, with the exception that 2.6D add provision of such information as at the option of the person addressing the board. I would strike paragraph 2.6A. 2.6B hopefully could read something like, members of the audience who wish to address the board on a particular item on the agenda shall present as directed by the chair. .9 again should be consistent with 1.3. 6.4, I think we can make that a should statement. 6.9, if we put a period after the word opinions and then a new sentence, civil discourse is encouraged. And with that, I would move that the bylaws be so modified.
So let me ask you, 2.9, you had addressed that one, correct, being consistent?
Yes, to be consistent with the new language in 1.3, the staff has indicated.
Okay, are you open to a friendly amendment? Because I saw B. If the audience members wish to address the board, I don't think anyone needs to line up behind a podium or sit in the front two rows. I think we just went through a meeting where everyone was able to act in a civil manner, and I'm not going to tell people where they have to sit, and I think we can delete that one as well. So that's what 2.6.1.
We could either delete it, or my change was be to present as directed by the chair, and that could include speaker slips or however the chair would direct that be.
Would you be
presented in an orderly manner?
Just a deletion of it.
I'd be fine with that too.
And with those changes, I will second your motion. Matt, did you have anything?
My only comment would be I would ask that we take those changes and bring this back for the next meeting so that I can review those changes and thoughtfully consider them if there's any other input from the public. I just wasn't ready for that tonight to be able to commit behind it.
Okay.
Although I'm not opposed, I'd like to be able to consider it first.
I have no objection to that.
Okay.
So we move that it be brought back with these changes
at the next regular scheduled meeting?
In a legislative draft form. Correct.
Mm-hmm. You're
good
with that?
I'm good with that, and I'll modify the motion to include that.
And then I will second that modified motion. And so with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries.
Excuse me, Chairman Hill,
yes.
Just for clarification, we will go back and review the tape, but Chairman Hill mentioned 6.9, and I do not have a 6.9 in my copy.
Neither did I.
It was 2.9.
It was 2.9.
Oh, 2.9.
He must have misspoke.
We can review the changes. I had changes at 2.6D, 2.6A and B to be stricken. 2.9 consistent with the new 1.3. 6.4 changed to should, and 6.5 a period after opinions. And a new sentence, this course is encouraged.
Okay. Staff good on that direction?
Yes, I think we have the direction we need.
Very good. Let's take a 10-minute break. We're going to reconvene the meeting for Wednesday, March 2nd. I believe we had just concluded item number 9A. Let's move on to item 9B. This is a mid-year budget review. Staff report, please.
Good evening, board. The staff recommendation is that we review the attached profit and loss statement comparing actual revenues and expenses with adopted budget and provide direction to staff regarding recommended budget amendments and related matters presented in the staff report. At the top of, on the subject line, it shows resolution 2015.xxx. That should show 2016.xxx. -XXX. As of December 31st, district accounts with the county showed balances of $923,148,000. In Fund 19, in Fund 20 or Fund 26, is $524,181. During the first half of the fiscal year 2015, the operating fund received a total ordinary income, which is basically our sewer fees, of $1.3 million. Total expenses for that same period in Fund 19 were $1.2 million, showing that we're operating in the black with revenue to expenses. This fund was also received other income totaling $1.8 million. The majority of that was the $1.6 million that was carried over from last year. Fund 19 transferred $940,000 to Fund 26 during this period. We budgeted to transfer, I believe, $1,080 over the course of the year. So the majority of the transfer is done already. $180,000. And so the majority of the transfer from 19 to 26 is done already.
$1,080,000
Not a good night for me. Hey, bear with me here.
Okay, John. Okay. You're doing fine.
I'm running, my battery's running on low. To Fund 26, this fund has not received, and Fund 19 has not received 4 to 6 months of expected revenue from Oceano Community Services as of December 31st. So we're running in the black, and we still haven't received all our monies from OCSD. Following the end of the mid-year, or 6 months, staff reviewed fiscal year 2015-16 account line under each fund. The account line items under each fund were within or under the anticipated budget, with the exception of the four items. These items are discussed below. Account 19-70-32 equipment rental. It's 261% of the annual budget it expended. Most of that is due to the failure of the pipeline and the resulting necessity to rent two pumps and all the related piping for a period of about 6 months. So that explains where that expense came from. Also, we had our bypass pump down for several months, so we were paying a rental fee to rain for rent for pumps that would stand by and be backup pumps. An increase to that budget line item by $19,000 is being recommended to reflect actual expenditures for this account line as of the mid-year for a total budget of $25,000. The adjustment would be taken from the prior year budget carryover, which is the $1.6 million that was brought over from last year, what's left of it. And number two item is account membership seminars and meetings. 85% of the annual budget expended. We spent a lot of that sending one of our operators to SCADA training. We've installed a new SCADA. We want to be able to operate it ourselves. We don't want to have to hire an integrator or engineers when every time something breaks. So we've sent one of our operators to that training. It's been a little bit costly, so we're a little bit ahead of our budget on that. An increase to the budget line item by $5,000 is being recommended to reflect actual expenditures for this account line item as of a mid-year total budget of $30,000. The reason we're asking for this is that we have an annual conference that comes up specifically in April, and we'd like to send a couple of our staff to that annual conference to keep up with the churning trends in our industry. This adjustment will be taken from advertising, legal, and recruitment. I'll tackle item four first. Count 19-80-56 safety supplies, 92% of an annual budget expended. An increase to the budget line item by $5,000 is recommended to reflect actual expenditures for this account line item as of mid-year for the total budget of $15,000 for the year. This adjustment will be taken from advertisement, legal, and recruitment, which we allocated $100,000 for, and we're not going to get anywhere near that. Item 3, account 197071, professional services, attorney fees, is at 221% of our annual budget expended. An increase to the budget line by $130,000 is being recommended to reflect actual expenditures for this account line item as of mid-year for a total budget of $178,000. This budget item is high. We right at the end of right at the beginning of this fiscal year, we lost our normal attorney, our attorney that had been here for some time, and we retained another attorney in the interim. There was a lot of changeover information that had to be exchanged, and that became very costly. And then at the end of that, we acquired another co-counsel, and the exchange of information has been quite high. In addition to that, we've had a lot of activities with contracts. We've had a lot of activity with the Knutson report. We've had a lot of resultant activity with considering responses from potential litigation. And so we've had, it's not been a normal year with regard to our normal legal counsel. We don't expect it to continue to be as expensive as it's been for the last several months. I don't know what we could have done to change that. I just think that it was a product of the circumstances. And so we just need to catch up with it. Again, I don't think this will be something that we'll budget this amount for next year. We're just trying to keep pace this year. And with that, that's the end of my report. I'd entertain any questions from the board.
So if there's many questions, Matt, do you have questions?
No, I'll defer.
Okay, Jim?
Comment, but not questions.
Okay. So, John, can you just give me some clarification for me on item one? You talked about the equipment rental, and you're basically talking about increasing by $19,000. So is that to go? What's the total amount that will be, $25,000?
Yeah, that would be $25,000. We had the original budget was, I'm not sure.
Maybe $6,000.
So we
want to total out at 25.
That's what I had counted. I just wanted to get some confirmation on that. And that increase, I know when you show percentages, it just sometimes it's a little misleading. So the equipment rental, is that largely due to some of the repairs we had to do that were not expected, or is this, I'm just trying to figure out how we budgeted, it was budgeted so low.
I wouldn't say it was. It wasn't so much the repairs, because actually we attributed that to that account for the repair. But the problem that we had that was overshadowed by a lot of things was that when that problem began, we were trying to use our bypass pump, and our bypass pump didn't function. So as a result, we ended up, our bypass pump has a capacity of 10 million gallons. So we ended up renting two pumps from Rain for Rent that were unrelated to the emergency bypass, but were related to just that failure of our bypass pump. So we rented two pumps from Rain for Rent for a number of months. I think each pump was like $3,000 a month to rent, so that we would have backup until we got our backup pump in. We've got our backup pump fixed, and so that's the bulk of the overage.
And then membership, you were talking about going, so basically we had $25,000 budget and we'd be going to 30, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then maybe just overall, can you talk to the budget where we are mid-year? Because I think when I look through all the tables, we see some where we're at 50% we're halfway through and we're less than that because we haven't expended some funds, and some we've spent over. So overall, where would you say we are?
Overall, we're doing well. Again, we've had a total income from fees, which is what we count on as our normal income, of $1.3 million. And our expenditures in operating has only been 1.2. So we're basically $90,000 in the black through 6 months, even with unexpected expenditures. We've transferred almost $1 million over to replacement. We had originally budgeted to send $680,000 to replacement, but the $400,000 for that pipe is out of replacement. So we were sending that extra $400,000 over. And so we're going to end up sending $1 million over, but most of that's already been sent over. So in the next 6 months, that won't impact that. In other words, we've already sent most of what we had to replacement. So we're looking really good. We won't have to transfer very much more money over to replacement. And if we continue to keep pace as we have, then we should end the year within our budget or right at our budget. Budgeted amount of three. I think our total budget for the year was $3.2 million or something like that. So, having spent only 1.2 through 6 months is pretty good.
Okay, great.
And I do want to say thanks for the clarification on the attorney's fees and the extraordinary year, because I know in some of the adjustments we talked about, this could become a good baseline for the next year. So I was glad to see you cognizant of that is not the norm.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. All right. If there are no other board member questions, let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone who'd like to address the item before the board?
Same old ratepayer. I'm concerned about the amount of money going towards legal expenses. I think the percentage was 221%, and I'm concerned about it on a lot of levels. First of all, if I could go to the resolution, because the resolution contains findings which you must make, and I don't think you can make these findings, and let me explain why. It states that district staff have identified the account line items which will require less monies and the account line items which will require additional monies than originally budgeted. Well, yes, they have identified that, but not one item in the budget was reduced. They were only increased. I'm also concerned that the overspend comes from last year's surplus, which, and maybe you've explained this away in the conversation you've just had, but last year's surplus is really the reserves, and so you're taking $130,000 more, which, from what I can tell, has already been spent, so it was spent before it was approved, and you're taking effectively what would be reserves, which could be used for all kinds of things, but most importantly for what we've been hearing for 10 years, redundancy, and you're using it to pay yet again more legal fees. And so it alarms me that you have lawyers who see you making decisions to overspend your budget by 221% on one item to pay them, and they didn't even alert you to the fact that maybe there ought to be some policy for the district about overspending your budget, any budget item, by 221% before you do it rather than after you do it, and especially when it would be an apparent conflict of interest, because it's to pay them. Your second whereas, district staff believes amending these account line items to reflect actuals will produce a trend that can be used for future budgeting efforts. God forbid that you use this trend for actuals, that every year that you have $178,000 for legal costs, which amounts to 10.8% of your budget on legal costs. Please, please do not use this as a pro forma of how to operate. You cannot make a finding that this is legitimate. Your third whereas, the board believes the recommended amendments are in the best interest of the public's health, safety, and general welfare. No. For 16 months, we've been coming to you as the public, and we've been saying, spending it all on lawyers is not in the best interest of the public. It is in the best interest of the board, perhaps. It is in the best interest of John Wallace, certainly. It is in the best interest of John Seitz, you bet. It is not in the best interest of the public. You are on notice.
Is there anyone else?
Beatrice Spencer, I just wanted to say that it thrilled me to see workers' compensation only at 27.9% of our budgeted amount, which was originally to be 90 for the year, and halfway through we're at 25, so good job on that. But then you have to offset that, of course, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but these attorney's fees have us all quite concerned. We're still litigating a fine that we could have paid for a lot less money a long time ago. And I just, for the life of everyone out here, we can't understand why this board cannot come to a consensus to stop that litigation. So maybe there's something you can tell us as to why you insist on moving forward and spending our money in this manner. Give us some good justification as to why we need to keep going forward, fighting a fine we know we're going to have to pay, and paying more and more in legal fees to do it. Anytime anything jumps by 221.8%, it should cause alarm. Not, of course, the small ticket items like number one, which was something that just, you know, that's just the cost of doing business is having to rent some equipment every once in a while. So three out of the four items on this are all within a normal scope and don't seem to be a problem for anyone. But that number three is really something that you gentlemen are going to have to take a look at seriously, because we cannot afford to keep this up. Thank you.
Ms. Spencer was nice when she said, maybe you can explain. I'm demanding you explain. This is absolutely asinine. It's kind of like the benefits package that I keep asking over and over and over again for you guys to review, because it's not sustainable. These attorney fees are not sustainable. Come on. How many times do we have to stand up here every 2 weeks and bring it up? Time and time and time again. We're getting tired of it. We want answers. That's what you're supposed to be doing for us. Please do it.
Anyone else?
Good evening. To answer former Mayor Peterson's comments about how do we get so over budget and you were never alerted, my concern is sometimes things in the warrants are being paid so far, or are showing up in the warrants so far after they've been paid. For instance, not one payroll check in 2016 has hit a warrant yet. Yet we're in March. So I can see how finances aren't really understood by the layperson, the audience, et cetera, when they're not even in front of us. The last payroll that we've ever seen even hit a warrant is from December 25th, and we're in March of 2016. How current are we really with getting information out to the public, to you, to make decisions? Thank you.
Anyone else?
Julie Tacker and I have a little bit different perspective in that these were all approved expenses. Either they came through on a warrant or they came through a contract process, Knudsen, Mike Nunley, whatever, these contracts have been coming before your board. John has some discretion, but he has a limit, and when he needs to go over, he does bring it to your attention. Whether or not we knew it was going over the budgeted amount, that's an accounting practice, whether or not he asks for a budget adjustment ahead of the expense or waits till the mid-year, and he's waited till the mid-year. Lots of districts do that. What I see, and congratulations to John Clemens for actually getting work done. In the 6 months or so that he's been at the helm, he's done a lot more than the previous administrator did in 2 years. So it cuts both ways in that we are going over budget, but we're also getting things done we haven't gotten done before. And then if you want to, I want to, place some blame, it falls back on Mr. Wallace. Whether it's a pipe that broke because it wasn't part of a regular maintenance program or previously budgeted as an expense that we knew was coming, that's on Mr. Wallace. Things were deferred. He spent a lot of time engineering things that never got built. So there's collateral, this is collateral damage back to the Wallace years. So this must be done. You must adjust your budget to reflect these expenditures. Maybe the direction is that you want to see something more quarterly so that it's not this big bang. And certainly, and I know you know the theme, is curtail the lawyers. You know, I give a little collateral damage to Mr. Sweet for hiring Brownstein without vetting any other attorneys. You didn't know what their rate was. It's $400 an hour. You were handed that firm, and you had no idea how long they would be here and how much interest they would take in your board and bill you for it. So those are my thoughts.
Is there anyone else?
Just a couple of things. One, I wondered how much money is due the district from Oceano ratepayers. We don't have a figure for that, and so that should be an anticipated revenue, I am assuming, somewhere along the line. And then the other question was, I mean, it's a piddly amount, but I just wanted to know why the safety supplies ran so high in the first half, and if that, whatever, if it was a change in OSHA or whatever, is that anticipated to continue? Because the amount you're asking for would not continue at that same rate.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this to the public, and let's start with Sharon's questions. Do we know how much is due the district from Oceano?
As a matter of fact, we do. We've been working on getting the billing out. We expect to send bills out as soon as tomorrow. The calculation was done, and it appears at this point, Oceano including residential and commercial being additional, and I want to be careful before I say this. This report is through December, so this is not the whole amount. Through December, probably it would have been somewhere around $150,000. And right now it stands at about $230,000 uncollected revenues from Oceano. Again, if we're just considering this report, though, it would have been in the neighborhood of $150,000 two periods.
And then she asked a question regarding safety supplies that ran high.
Yeah, there were two things. We went through and did a we had an electrician come through, and we did actually a survey of necessary electrical equipment. So we bought some equipment or some tools that are shockproof, where the handles are rubber and NEMA or whatever it is called. So we spent some equipment. We spent some money on one-time expense or expense that we won't typically spend on every year, and it had to do with electrical. And we also bought we bought new gas detectors for the operators to wear around the plant when they're in areas where we have low oxygen or dangerous gas. So, yeah, we did spend money on equipment that we won't spend typically every few years or so.
Okay. Yeah. John, I think Ms. Tacker brought up a couple of good points. And I know you were trying to address the increase in legals, and I thought you had done a fairly good job, but I'm just wondering if we if you have an opportunity to kind of line item the items that we're having to adjust for, because I think you did talk about the hiring of the firm. I know it's more than Brown. Hyatt, appropriate, right? And then also, you had talked about a lot of work being done on the Knutson report, correct?
Yes.
So I didn't know if that was information we had that we could bring forward. But also with respect to quarterly reports, it sounds like that's something that the district could probably consider going forward, and I think that would be a policy discussion.
That's typical board policy. I'll say simply, we didn't get it done this time. It's typical for this district to have quarterly reports before the board. So we will make every effort. We missed October. We just changed over district administration. I mean, I don't want to make excuses. We didn't get it done. We should have had a report before the board for October.
And thank you for doing that. And I just wanted to ask that question. I thought, you know, it's something that we'll all try to do a better job at. It's really hard to, I'm sorry, there's a lot of chattering. Ms. McLaughlin brought up, again, a really good point regarding payroll checks, and I'm just wondering if there's something maybe we can talk about how we can figure out a better way for those to be shown more frequently.
They are shown monthly.
Okay.
I'm not sure. They're shown under Rabble Bank, so I'm not sure she's mistaken, but it's already been listed at least once this year, if not twice already, on our warrant register. So.
Okay, so maybe there's a better way for us to kind of highlight those things.
It says it's under Rabble Bank, and it says payroll, so I'm not sure what more we need.
Okay. Matt, you have anything?
No, I thank you for this work on this. I just think ultimately in the long-term budget preparations, we need to bring back our long-range planning on our budget processes. You know, they can go out multiple years as we anticipate capital improvement projects, maintenance programs, the life cycle of equipment ending. And so I think that's an important thing to do in the future at our fiscal year budgeting process. And I'm prepared if there's, depending upon the other discussion, to make a motion.
I think Jim's got some comments. Jim?
My comments go to the attorney's fees. I am mindful that we had a very high cost interim attorney. Our hiring of co-counsel, Mr. Trujillo, Ms. Stockton, was certainly done with the eye toward cost reduction. But the amount of money that is being spent on attorney's fees cannot go unremarked. I look at the amount of money that it was represented. We're operating in the black. You know, even annualized, that's all of that operating in the black could be translated to attorney fees of one manner or another. So another way to look at that is we're looking for a district administrator. That's a district administrator full-time. In the past, these charges have tended to escalate out of control, in my opinion. And I would suggest possibly bi-monthly monitoring of that expense, just because it's a very large amount of money. And in the past, in my opinion, we haven't had adequate control over it. And I'm not sure that even quarterly monitoring, which we've not done to date, is adequate to see what's going on there. So I would ask that we monitor that bi-monthly, because it's certainly unsustainable. And I look at it was commented that we do the litigation. Hopefully that'll come to an end in the very near term. But, you know, I kept seeing bills from our prior attorney that just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. I had questions about some of those long-standing ones or ones that seem to come in long after the fact. But I think we need to monitor that account more closely than we have.
Okay.
And possibly, and some of that obviously comes back on the board, as we should provide better direction to council. One example that comes to mind is the Knudsen report, and obviously there was some redactions and so forth that were necessary to make on that, but I'm not sure that we gave adequate direction in terms of how that should be processed through for transmittal and so forth. So some of that does fall back on the board. And, you know, I take some responsibility for that. But I think we need to have closer control on that going forward.
Well, I agree with you that we need to have closer control, but with respect to the Knudsen report and redactions, I would certainly feel like we could rely on our attorneys to protect the interests of this district. So
I'm not questioning that.
So I think maybe some of the policy discussion we do need to have is, and you know, the bi-monthly monitoring. You know, if we've got the resources to do it and we understand what it takes, I'm fine with that. I don't know if we can make that decision tonight, but those are really good points. So
I would recommend, rather than increasing the amount by $130,000, I would increase it by one third of that amount, and then monitor it bi-monthly going forward.
So then that does, I think, beg the question of...
I think we already spent the money.
Well, that's... I wasn't going to make the statement. I was going to ask the question.
That's what I think.
This was at 6 months. What we show, the expenditure we show, we list right here, which is $106,000 was at as of December 31st. I'm pretty sure we're at about $130,000 right now. Don't hold me to that number, but it's not 106 anymore. And so if we bump it up a short amount, I'll be back before the board here in the next meeting probably. It may be okay, though. I'm just saying that's what will happen. So we're above 106. So.
Well, again, where we have multiple outside counsel and things of that nature, I think it may be wise for us to look at that again every couple months and make sure that we're on course with that, because quite frankly, this is a huge amount of money.
Okay. What's the pleasure of the board? Matt, do you have anything else?
No, those are all my comments. And I would say, though, that as to the legal expenses, it's more than just litigation. There's a lot of different hats that they're wearing and functions that legal is serving. And so it's a significant other number of items that are being covered by legal. So,
well, and I think it's well taken that we are certainly trying to get out of the business of litigation. But I do think, John pointed it out again regarding this being an extraordinary year, and we don't anticipate this being the situation next year. And with the additional oversight, Jim, that you're suggesting, I think we can definitely rein some of this in. I think we find ourselves in this situation because we had a lot of things at the, obviously the transition between attorneys, the additional work with the Knudsen report. I think those are, I would say that's one of the items that the community said they wanted. I think at this point, if this in fact is what we need to do to cover these expenses, and with the understanding that this is not establishing a baseline going forward, I think is where I think John said that, and I'm in agreement with that.
So I'll move to approve resolution number 2016-XXX, a resolution amending the fiscal year 2015-2016 budget at mid-year as presented.
Okay.
Would you be amenable to a bi-monthly review of legal fees associated with that?
Yes.
In that case, I'll second your motion.
Okay. There's a motion and a second, and I agree with that addition and the motion. So I think with that, let's do a roll call.
Chairman Hill? Oh. Director Hill, excuse me.
Yes.
Vice Chair Guerrero?
Yes.
The real Chairman Schultz?
Yes. Well, it's fine, John. It's been a long day and night for a lot of us.
Sure has.
Let's move on to item 9C. This is the Rescoped Recycle Water Facilities Planning Study. Staff report.
Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors approve the Rescoped Recycle Water Facilities Planning Study and direct staff to proceed with the study as proceeded. The original scope developed by SSL CSD and the City of Arroyo Grande, or it was developed by WSC for the city and for the district, evaluated potential opportunities for a scalping type facility that would take a partial flow and turn the water into reusable water. But at the investment analysis phase, we brought it to our board, and it was taken to the City of Arroyo Grande's board. And looking at the financial analysis, the board elected to direct staff to go out and find or investigate rescoping something that would be more beneficial to the district and more feasibly acceptable. And since then, we've had a number of discussions with WSC and with the City of Arroyo Grande. It's been present with everyone. We've actually reached out a little further and invited Grover Beach and Oceano to be part of the discussion because everyone would be impacted possibly by the decisions that are made here. But we finally narrowed it back down, and we had Arroyo Grande, representative for Arroyo Grande, and we had WC, and we sat down and we looked at what we believe would be the best interest of the district. Again, bearing in mind that the original reason for this grant and for this effort was to investigate a reasonable water reuse opportunities. And so obviously the original plan was too costly. So we've come up with a plan that makes sense for the district if we're going to really take serious looks at opportunities to reclaim our water and to reuse the resource that we have. But something that makes sense to the district feasibly and to Arroyo Grande in this case, and really the whole region is what we're looking for. So what we've asked WSC to do was go out and develop a scope that would investigate an opportunity for an off-site reclamation facility that would treat the entire flow from this district. I might add that during the course of this, we made contact with PISMO and to see where we might tie into what they were doing, and they're just full charging on what they're doing, and so there was not a whole lot of interest in adding the district to what they were doing, and so the scope of this study, as it's changed and been amended, is focusing on off-site full advanced treatment on behalf of the district, and possibly for groundwater recharge. I have Dan Heimel, so I'm going to ask him to come up and help some. But for groundwater treatment and the possibilities of opportunities for agricultural reuse, I want to add before I hand it over to Dan that we actually asked, I know it's an issue, WSC to contact the State Water Board and check on if it's acceptable for us to change what we're looking at, our scope in the middle, and still receive the grant funds. So I'll let Dan take over.
Okay, Dan?
Yeah, so I think John has characterized it well. The original concept for the Recycled Water Facilities Planning Study was to look at an upstream scalping facility. The intent there was to try to identify recycled water opportunities not at the existing plant because of permitting concerns about recycled water upgrades. That was identified as not being cost effective in the initial portion of the study, which really worked as intended. There was a budget up front to do a high level cost evaluation of this scalping alternative, and then provide the opportunity to reevaluate and rescope, which the district and its member water agencies have done, and identified new recycled water opportunities to evaluate that provide the opportunity for treating the entirety of the district's flow, producing additional water, and potential regional collaboration options with the City of Pismo Beach and its project. And so that's, I believe, outlined in the scope there, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, I
match your question.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Thank you, Mayor Schultz. I think on the regional approach, I don't know if you recall, but Oceano had supported on a 4-1 vote the Pismo project. And I was the dissent. I said, no, I think it needs to be a reasonable approach. And I think that we can maybe get some traction if we go back and say, hey, Oceano wants a reasonable approach. You might lose their support unless you come to the table. So I think there might be some negotiating room there with them. Do you have any thoughts about what this is going to be look like as far as a standalone facility, off-site, on-site? Can you educate us?
Yeah, definitely. So the concept is evaluating on-site upgrades at the existing plant as one alternative, and then an off-site facility that would take water from the existing plant, treat it to a higher level, and utilize it for groundwater recharge. The benefit of this approach is it leaves both options open for the district. If, in communication with the Coastal Commission, it's identified that upgrades are possible at the existing plant, that alternative is being studied in parallel with an offsite. If those communications indicate otherwise, and the only real opportunities for advanced treatment or recycled water upgrades are offsite, then that site is being evaluated. And so we've tried to design it so the engineering analysis that's included in the recycled water facilities planning study works in parallel with the permitting conversations that are going on with the Coastal Commission and the other agencies, so that hopefully in June those two elements can come together and provide the district with a better picture of the most feasible and cost-effective options for moving forward. And the only other part I would add to that is the City of Pismo Beach is taking a similar approach with their Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. They're looking at on-site upgrade opportunities, but additionally investigating off-site because of similar concerns at their plant, potential flooding issues.
And we might end up competing for the same site.
Yeah, or identifying a site that's large enough to accommodate both agencies and realizing savings due to economies of scale.
Then let me comment on that. I don't know that it would be competing. I think if it came to a point where it was in the best interest of both entities to have an offsite, that we would come to an agreement. In the conversation with Pismo, their issue was that they believe we're not as far as along, but if we were at the same point as them, then maybe we could have a discussion. So I don't think there'd ever be a case where we'd actually compete for the same piece of property.
Just saying, yeah. You know, because their trunk line comes our direction, and obviously I think this water reclamation is one of the most important projects, if not the most important project that we don't have done that needs to be done. And so I think it's incredibly important, and thank you.
Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Jim, any questions?
And the Water Board is amenable to the redesign of the study to accommodate this rather than the scalping plant?
Yes. In our conversations with the Water Board, they are very open to rescoping the study, and it still retains its eligibility. As long as it continues to look at a recycled water alternative, they're on board.
And pretty much all we have to do is just file the paperwork to make that change.
Yeah, actually, they didn't even, it's even less than that. You just need to approve the scope and the study can proceed. And then,
okay, those are my questions.
Okay. So I'd say, yeah, we all certainly are interested in a regional facility or working together, but here's an opportunity that we have at a facility that we actually have control over. And so I just wanted to thank you for clarifying that, because that was going to be my question. We would not necessarily be competing with Pismo, but we certainly need to make some progress in order for us to have a more meaningful discussion. Is that kind of the way you see it, John?
Yes, for us to have a discussion that they'd be interested in, we need to make progress. Obviously, we have the resource. We even have more of the resource than they do. So it makes sense for this district to investigate what we can do either with or without working with them. It's really that simple.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Let me see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address this item before the board.
Julie Tacker. Let's talk about Pismo. Just so you know, Pismo's a 1 million gallon per day plant. They suggest that they could inject or reuse 309 million gallons a day. So that's less than a million a day. I like the regional approach. They may be further ahead of you, but in wastewater years, they're only minutes ahead of you. When it comes down to really hashing out a project, they're not very far ahead of you. And Matt just suggested some leverage in that Oceano might pull its support. There's other leverage. You own the outfall. You may not want all their brine at the concentration of what it's going to be after they recycle their water, because that means you have to keep your flows fresher. Pismo needs each one of your agencies to implement their project. They're looking at injection sites in each one of your city boundaries or your district boundary. They need you as much as you need them. That's what makes a regional approach. And that's where you have leverage. And I hope you use it. When we get to rescoping this, first of all, I don't know how much money's left on the table. I think that would be appropriate to find out. Second of all, I don't think you want to put any more facilities on your site. So just the one investigation of an advanced treatment facility off-site is really all you should pursue. Your site is too small and too cluttered already to put millions of dollars worth of recycled water infrastructure at risk of tsunami or flood, all the things that are wrong with your site. Why would you do that? Don't even go there. Don't waste Dan's time looking at that site anymore. And when you are looking at recharge, which you're not doing that, Pismo's doing that, Oceano's doing a little bit of that, maybe Grover and Arroyo have done that, I don't know. But that off-site facility can be closer to those places that you know where the water has to go. And lastly, you are NCMA partners. Partners don't say, hey, our ship's left. They will wait for you because you need each other. And I just looked it up on my phone. I didn't even know my phone could do this. There's an article about the Pismo Recycled Water Project, and it says you're going to have shared governance of that water. So don't turn your back on the power you have. You're not a water district, this district, but each one of you represents a district that is a water district. And when you bring that collective knowledge here, you can refine what you're doing here. This is the sewer ratepayers' money and the state of California's grant money. Don't waste it. Don't waste it. Refine this scope of work to do one thing. And somebody, maybe it's your new administrator, with some real backbone, has to push back on Pismo to say a regional approach is really the only way this is going to work in a Northern Cities Management Area partnership.
Thank you, Julie. Anyone else? Seeing that one come forward, let me close and bring it back to the board. Any additional discussion? Jim?
Sure. The scalping plant idea never really made sense to me in the first place. A regional approach definitely does make sense. I think the NCMA is looking at that and is going to be hopefully participating in that in the short term. The study should look at, you know, who takes the water, what use. Any recycle project is going to be years out in any event, and by that time, direct reuse may be permissible. So I think the regulatory landscape is probably in a state of somewhat flux, is rapidly or not, is that may change from time to time. And then, of course, the question of who pays for it. And probably not something necessarily that this district would be hopefully paying for. I think the water purveyors are probably the ones who would pay. We have the resource, but I think we have a valuable resource. So those are my comments. I'm glad to see this study rescoped and prepared to support it.
Okay, Matt?
I support it as well. I think that this is one of the most pressing issues of our time. Lopez Lake here, beginning of March, still at, what, 27%. So this is something, even if with years of normal or above average rain, it's going to take a long time to recharge our aquifer, to restore the lake. State water is not always available and is not available to every community here. So I think that this is something that's important to do and that we should get behind it. I do like some of the suggestions that Ms. Tacker had regarding putting some pressure on Pismo Beach to come to the table to join us in this endeavor. We have a much larger population base between our three entities than they do, and so they have a lot of money, but it makes more sense for us to me. I think one plant could treat it just as easily as both plants, and so a collaborative effort I think should be encouraged, and our staff should be directed to do that. How we pay for it, I think, is a discussion for another day, but there's some ways to do that, and how it is reintroduced back into the water table is something obviously that will be considered by this as well. So I can support this. So.
Okay. So I'll be brief, I think. Wow. I have to say I agree with probably 95% of the things that Ms. Tacker said. Actually, I probably couldn't have said it better myself, so I'm glad you said it. Thank you very much. I think the only area that I do want to say is if we should at least, I don't know how far we go down the road, but at least look and see, because we have a great resource, and I don't know if we can do this on site, and if there is a point in which we really find that we can't, then we need to stop focusing on that and really look at the off-site facility closer to our communities. But I agree. I think that collectively, together, we are able to move forward as opposed to having one community say they're moving forward and then bringing us all in one entity at a time. So I think hopefully we are all on the same page moving that direction. So with that, let's see if there's a motion on this item.
I would move that the board approve the rescoped recycled water facilities planning study and direct staff to proceed with the study as described in the scope of work.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, how about the roll call?
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Guerrero?
Yes.
Vice Chair Guerrero?
Keep switching hats.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. And the only other flipping comment I was going to make was I was going to say, Julie, you're hired, but I think we should have some conversation. I think she's got great ideas around water, and maybe there's some advisory things we can do. But anyway, I'm just one vote up there. Anyway. Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's move on to item number 10, miscellaneous items. 10A, is there any miscellaneous oral communications?
None.
Okay, any miscellaneous written communications?
Say what it is, please.
Yes, please.
The district received a letter from SDRMA, and it is attached to your board pack.
Okay.
The SDRMA board approved a longevity distribution in the amount of $856,492 for property liability members and $327,076 for workers' compensation members. For the property liability program, over 90% of members will receive the distribution credit, and for the workers' compensation program, over 86% of members will receive the distribution credit. And it says, congratulations, since you have participated in our property liability program for 16 years, as of June 30th, 2015, your agency will receive a longevity distribution credit on your 2016-17 renewal invoice in the amount of $2,228. We encourage you to share this valuable news with your governing body.
We will consider it shared. Very good. Thank you. All right.
That's in closed session.
Mr. Clemens, do you have anything on your verbal report to the,
the
board?
A couple of things. Staff plans, and we've spoken to our chair. We're going to visit or try to get on the agenda for each member agency and bring this information forward. I know there's a lot of discussion about water, and I know that Pismo's contacted everyone, and I think that at this point it's important that those councils know what the district is doing with regard to looking at the subject. So we're going to ask to be on the calendar for each member agency and give them an update on what we're doing with the recycled water opportunities. And so, with regard to, okay. The next thing is future agendas. So on our next agenda, we'll cover permitting again. We'll have an update to the written application, the written CDP application, and CEQA information. We will be bringing the engineering contract back. The Kenny Jinks engineering contract for the redundancy project will be at our next meeting. We will, I expect to bring back to the board we're preparing our final plans to make the migration to the tax roll. We will bring an update to the board in the form of a staff report so the board can look at it again about our mitigation to tax, our movement to tax roll, and whether we want to continue in that direction. The bylaws will be brought back at the next board meeting. I think it was the next one. Is the direction. Also, at our first meeting in April, I think we need to begin discussing the OPEB, the other post-employment benefits. I think it's time. We're coming up on our, we're starting to have to work on our budget. Yeah. And at this time, I'm going to invite any of the board members that want to participate. We're starting to form our next year's budget. OPEB is something that we're going to need to address. I want to bring that up, and I want to, at the first meeting in March, so that the board can look at it, look at where we are with it, what we've done historically, and what direction this district should take with regard to those benefits. Again, it's part of the larger budget picture coming for next year. So that's what I'd like to do in April. Other than that, I don't have anything else.
Thank you, John, and a few things. So just want to make sure. So you're talking about making a presentation at each of the member agencies. My guidance to you is to work with the board members that are on those, that sits on those, obviously the councils or the district, so that I would think that would be part of the committee update. So just make sure you coordinate that way. We're presenting information to the rest of our council and our communities. So please make sure that that's a coordinated effort.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
The second thing you brought up was coming back with respect to putting the rates on the tax rolls. I think we heard a couple of folks tonight who expressed some concerns, and I think that would be an appropriate time to have that additional discussion. So I wanted them to know that I did not ignore their concern or their question tonight, but it would be more appropriate to address it when that item comes back, because I think we're learning more information about that. And unfortunately, that's a outgrowth of, well, we don't want to relive this whole thing about the different agreements between the different member agencies, but let's, you know, make sure that we've captured those concerns and we have that discussion. The third thing is the bylaws will come back. They'll be in the legislative form. I think that'll make it a lot easier as we go forward. And then finally, thank you for the public employee benefits. I know that that's not been an item that's been brought up. We just need to, obviously, there's a lot going on, and we got to find the appropriate time to have that discussion. So thanks for keeping that on the front burner, and we look forward to you bringing that to us. Anyone else have anything to add?
No.
Okay. All right, so we now have closed session. So I was going to have legal counsel cover these, and the only one that's going to make sure that we didn't forget about is that we have we continued our discussion from earlier regarding public employee appointment and the district administrator. So that's one, and then can you cover the other two?
Yes, Chairman Scholes, but I believe you want to have public comment first on the closed session items?
Well, so what I was thinking is we just announce them.
Announce it?
And I haven't forgotten. Then we'll ask for public comment. Thank you.
The board will hold a continued closed session from earlier today on public employee appointment, and then we'll also hold a closed session on two existing litigation matters, the Sanitation District versus the State Water Resources Control Board, and the Sanitation District versus the State Water Resources Control Board. I'm sorry, that title's wrong. The South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus the Special District Risk Management Association.
Okay.
That concludes my announcement.
Very good. Do any members of the public want to address any item that is on closed session?
I believe you did two interviews tonight. I believe there were three candidates. I am wondering if I am correct about that. When will the third candidate be interviewed? And talking about my favorite thing, benefits, are we going to talk about the benefits before we hire another person and give them 100% benefits? Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and quick comment on the administrator discussions. I'm hopeful that you're asking if there's any tie, any relationship with Mr. Wallace. And then vetting what that is and that we don't have carryover. At your last meeting, I remembered that Mayor Hill was going to have something to, is that what you're revisiting tonight? And are we going to get an update? I thought we were going to get an update on the litigation with the water board. And then the insurance company, any movement there. I think it's just time that we get an update.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Apparently I got some comments that my sign wasn't really very clear last time. So I've changed the numbers. We're now at 1,412 days, and this is actually dated from the time the State Water Board sent the letter offering the $775,000 fine and settling. So we're at 1,400 days of paying for something that we don't really even need to pay for. I mean, an increase now. We're over $1 million because the $775,000 offer is off the table, from what I understand. Now it's the $1.1 or $1.3 million. In addition to the legal fees that we keep paying to avoid paying a fine we know we need to pay. So, Mayor Scholz, I've heard you be in agreement two times tonight. Number one was with Ms. Tacker's comments, and I heard you mention that we are trying to get out of the litigation business. And so I'm hoping tonight is the night that you're feeling like making it a three things. Let's do it, guys.
And by the way, your sign was very clear. So, was there anyone else?
That's to get you in a good mood. Maybe. Or maybe not. Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. I just wanted to say that what have we gained in the 1,400 and whatever days? What have we gained? We are still at a bypass. We are still facing the fine. From what I understand, the state is requiring full restitution now. And in addition to which, we have just as much in legal fees, and we haven't gained anything. You do have the power, the three of you, tonight, to say, we are going to settle with the state, pay whatever is required, and end it now.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this. And there's one clarification I do want to make on, we are not interviewing three candidates, correct? I was, right, so we've only interviewed, that's okay. Okay, with that, we will recess into closed session.